Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Janavallabha Giribhanadari. Thank you. Gopi Janavallabha Giribhanadari. Yasura nandana braja janaranjana Yasura nandana braja janaranjana Jamuna tera manachari Jamuna tera banachari Ajaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Ajaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Nitya Lila Pravista Astatara Satasisi Manas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Prem Sikoho Sri Krishna Tetanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Shri Gadadha Shivasiti Gaura Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinatha Shama Kundarada Kundi Gita Gopadhan Ki Jai Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai Shri Gopal Bhatta Goswami Ki Jai Shri Ramchandra Kaviraj Ki Jai Vaishnava Sangha Ki Jai, Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus seat of Sisi Guru and Gauranga.
I just forgot to mention, in case if anybody lost a counter clicker, finger clicker for japa,
Vishwambhar Goswami, the now deceased previous head of the Radharaman Temple, once said to me, he said, I notice you ISKCON boys are very happy to use these clickers. He said, you should put a Tulsi bead on it so at least you're touching Tulsi. So if you see my clicker, it's got Tulsi bead on it. Yeah. Anyway, so today we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 22, text number 85, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions on devotional service to Sanatana Goswami. Ata antyantikam shemam prichamo bhavato nyagat samsarishmin shadadopi Satsanga seva dirninam Ata atyantikam shemam Prichamo bhavato naga Samsarishmin shadardodbhi Satsanga seva dirninam Ata atyantikam shemam Prichamo bhavato naga Samsarishmin shanarupi satsanga seva dirninam. Please chant. Atta, therefore, due to the rarity of seeing pure devotees of the Lord, atyantikam, supreme, shemam, auspicious, prichama, we are asking, bhavata, you, anaga, O sinless one, samsare, in the material world, asmin, this, shana arda, lasting half a moment, api, even, satsanga, association with devotees, sevadi, a treasure, ninam, for human society. Translation. O devotees, O you who are free from all sins, let me inquire from you about that which is supremely auspicious for all living entities. Association with a pure devotee for even half a moment in this material world is the greatest treasure for human society. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 2nd chapter, verse number 30. Om Ajnana Timaranda Syad Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksuhun Militam Minatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarini Avancha Kapatirivischa Kripa Sindhu Vahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhara Sri Vasudevi Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This verse here from the Bhagavatam, which Mahaprabhu is speaking to Sanatana Goswami, has a couple of qualifying statements in it, which kind of makes us look at ourselves. O devotees. Okay, so we consider ourselves devotees. We're here attending the Bhagavatam. We're here taking part in the temple functions. O you who are free from all sins. So are we free from all sins? Do we feel ourselves free from our sins? Are we taking up activities which eliminate our sinful activities and then not engaging in them again? This is the seventh offense against the holy name, not to take up sinful activity while chanting the holy name. But then once we identify who we are, the treatise is put forward there that we want to inquire about that which is auspicious for everyone. That which is auspicious for everyone. And what is that? It is the association of a pure devotee of the Lord. What is it, lava? Lava means half a moment here. It's also used in this shana arda. So Prabhupada mentions that this verses from the Bhagavatam, so it is appropriate that we go to that verse, because although quoting it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the purport, Prabhupada doesn't say much. In the purport on this verse in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada speaks significantly. So we'll go to there. The word sevadi, or a great treasure, is significant in this verse. Just as an ordinary man is overjoyed to discover an unexpected treasure, one who is actually intelligent is overjoyed to gain the association of a pure devotee of the Lord, by which one's life can easily be perfected. We can extract from this a very interesting analogy, because I'm sure I'm not the only one in this assembly that has received that email that we've got good fortune waiting for us. There's money. If we can just provide some certain information, then there's money going to be made available to us. Or they have these things that they advertise. There are government funds just waiting for you. Put in your name, see if you have any. I did that once, and I think I got like $25 or something like that, you know. So, but it's an unexpected treasure. You know, you're enticed. Here, there's unexpected treasure waiting for you. And if you get this treasure, then all your problems will be solved. Because the indication, the hope, is that, of course, you'll get some much larger sum than $25, maybe $25,000 or something of that, you know, like that. So people are hopeful, because if I can get this extra money, then my life will be perfect. Everything will be very comfortable. I won't have any difficulties. What's that? When someone wins a lottery ticket, one of the first things they think about doing is quitting their day job. All right, I'm through working now. You know, I don't have to work anymore. Unfortunately, it doesn't quite work that way, and we know the history and story of all these things. They carry with them so much other involvement and entanglement. But we understand from the perspective of the Bhagavatam, and as Prabhupada's mentioning in this purport here, that one who's actually intelligent, they take this great joy, this great treasure, unexpected treasure, to be the association of a devotee of the Lord, to be the opportunity to be in the company of Vaishnavas, to have the opportunity to hear from the Vaishnavas, to have the opportunity to discuss the topics of Krishna with the Vaishnavas. This actually becomes the great unexpected treasure. Because why is it unexpected? What have we done in this life to warrant this? We've done nothing. We've taken a very sinful birth. Some of us have been fortunate to be born into Vaishnava families, successive generations, but we've taken an unfortunate birth in this material world. Most of us have engaged in unlimited different types of sinful activities before taking up the process of Krishna consciousness. So we would not expect this. But by that association, all that can be delivered. Now, Prabhupada goes on. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the words atyantika shemam, or the supreme good, indicate that situation in which one cannot be touched by even the slightest fear. Abhay, one who is free from fear. Abhayacharanadavinda, one who is free from fear because they've taken shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. So this is the indication here that by taking that shelter, well, there's no fear in one's life because one has devotional service. Now we are entangled in the cycle of birth, old age, disease, and death. Because our entire situation can be devastated in a moment, in a single moment, we are constantly in fear. But the pure devotees of the Lord can teach us the practical way to free ourselves from material existence and thus to abolish all types of fears. This doesn't mean the fears themselves are not present, but it means we're not impacted by it. We fear so many things. Samsara means the fire of material existence, which we know is burning all over the world in many different places, destroying everything in its path. Not that we aren't impacted by that. We've seen in these fires in the West Coast, many devotees have lost their homes, their belongings, everything. But the devotee understands this is not a fearful situation for my life. my material circumstance may be put into difficult situation. I may lose all my material facilities, but I have no need to fear because Krishna is my shelter. And even if I lose this material body, if we are situated nicely in devotional service, taking up that antyatika shrimam, then we get to go back to Krishna, and then we have no fear at all. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, normal etiquette would dictate that a host immediately ask a guest who has arrived about their well-being. But such an inquiry is unsuitable to place before self-satisfied devotees of the Lord, who are themselves the bestowers of well-being. It's actually mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilasa, it is considered offensive to say to someone, so how are you? Because immediately puts them in the bodily concept of life. Okay, how am I? Well, let me see, my neck hurts. I got a thing on my foot here today, you know, my digestion. You know, we immediately start thinking like that. No, I'm not this body. So here it's pointing out that when you have a guest come to your home, because this description is about the nine yogendras coming to King Nidhi, and it's explaining how in receiving them, one should immediately reach, so how is everything? Prabhupada mentions this on a lecture. I talked about this, I think, the last time I gave class, that one would generally say, so how is the family? How is the business? Everything is going good. This is normal etiquette when you're greeting someone. When you greet a sadhu, there is no family, there is no business. The only business is giving Krishna consciousness, which is what they've come for. So such a question would not be pertinent here. It's unsuitable to place this type of a question before self-satisfied devotees of the Lord. Self-satisfied. This is an important word there. Because why? Because these self-satisfied devotees are giving, they're bestowing their well-being on others. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the king knew it would be useless to ask the sages about their business affairs, since the only business of a pure devotee of the Lord is the achievement of the supreme goal of life. According to Bhagavad Gita, the goal of life is to free oneself from the cycle of birth and death and reinstate oneself as an eternal servant of God on the platform of spiritual bliss. Reinstate. Sometimes you'll find that in the business world you may have a particular position and then that gets taken away, but then some review is done, okay, we'll reinstate you in there. So you get that position back. So here Prabhupada's making it clear, our duty, our dharma, our natural position is to be the servant of Krishna. But we've forgotten that. We've become completely absorbed, entangled, and enamored by all this material energy surrounding us. But by the contact with a pure devotee, their business is to reinstate us in our position as a servant of Krishna. Pure devotees of the Lord do not waste time with ordinary mundane affairs. Sometimes foolish relatives of a Vaishnava preacher lament that such a transcendental preacher has not used his life for material business and that so much money has therefore been lost by the practice of spiritual life. Again, we know from Prabhupada's own example, he's commented that, you know, his family was not very satisfied with him taking up fully the process of preaching Lord Chaitanya's mission. There was no money coming in from the business. And on his side, he was disappointed because not only were the sons not interested in the family business, they had other interests, but they were also not interested in his family business of taking up the preaching of Mahaprabhu's message. So we can see that Prabhupada, in a non-direct way, is indicating his own life. Plus, we have the example of Giriraj Swami, that coming from a very, very wealthy family, and he tells the story how his father offered him a check, I think it was $1 million, some vast amount of money, if you just leave this Krishna consciousness, come back to the family business and, you know, do what's proper. You know, so these type of ventures, these monies, you know, for the devotee, they're not that big of a deal. If it can be used in Krishna service and gotten by some simple means, yes, but to give up one's Krishna consciousness to attain such wealth, this is not the interest of a devotee. Such ignorant persons cannot imagine the unlimited prosperity available on the spiritual platform to those who have surrendered heart and soul to the mission of the Lord. King Nimi was himself a learned Vaishnava, and therefore he did not foolishly ask the sages about worldly ordinary affairs. He immediately inquired about antyatikam shemam, the highest, most perfect goal of life. Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur continues with the word anaga, O sinless ones. He says that this word anaga, O sinless ones, has two meanings. Anaga indicates the nine yogendras were themselves completely free from sin. So they are saintly persons, sadhus. They have taken up the path of devotional service, perfected themselves. So there is no sin. Nothing they do carries any sin with it. He states also, though, it indicates that merely by the great fortune of seeing them and hearing from them submissively, an ordinary sinful person can also be freed from their sins and achieve everything desired. So this is the application to ourselves. Certainly ordinary persons, certainly sinful persons, but simply by seeing, what to speak of hearing from a pure devotee, as we all had the fortune to hear from Srila Prabhupada, an ordinary sinful person becomes freed from their sins and achieves everything they desire. Now, if we compare this to the previous paragraph, we say, no way, I didn't get that $1 million. You know, what everything I desired. But that's not what a devotee desires. A devotee desires to always be engaged in devotional service, to always be engaged in hearing about the pastimes of the Lord, to always be engaged in speaking about the pastimes of the Lord. This is their great fortune. Now, there's a word tossed in there, which is what we would call a caveat. On hearing from them submissively, this is stated early in the Bhagavad Gita, that one has to hear with a submissive mind, render service. Rendering service indicates submissiveness. If we render service to someone, it means that we've submitted ourselves to them. Now, of course, in the material concept, this is a very bad thing because it means, you know, now somebody's controlling me. This is actually the goal spiritually. We want to be controlled. We want to have our guidance, our direction, our activities indicated and controlled by those with the higher spiritual vision. So submissive hearing is indicated as being essential for this state of becoming freed from all sins. One might object that since the great sages had just arrived, the king should not have been so impatient as to inquire from them about the perfection of life. Perhaps the king should have waited until the sages themselves invited this inquiry. Such a hypothetical objection is answered in the words Shanaro P. It's nice how Prabhupada points out this is a hypothetical thing. You know, he's looking at this verse and understanding what objections may be brought forward by persons who do not want to embrace the process of Krishna consciousness, may not appreciate the activities of King Nimi. So he says, but that's all right. This has already been dealt with by the use of these two Sanskrit words. Even a moment's association with a pure devotee, or half a moment's association, is sufficient to give one the perfection of life. An ordinary person who is offered a great treasure will immediately desire to claim such a treasure. We discussed that. Similarly, King Nimi was thinking, why should I consider myself fortunate enough to have such great sages stay here for a long time? Because I'm an ordinary person, undoubtedly they will be leaving soon. Therefore, let me immediately take advantage of their holy association. Now, this is an important point because he's realizing, okay, the sages have come here. The business of sages is not to reside. Now, of course, during the Chaturmasya time, we were discussing with Gopal Bhatta when Mahaprabhu stayed there. That's a whole other story. But generally speaking, the sages don't stay in one place for any extended period of time. And coming and going like this constantly, always traveling, always sharing their knowledge. So why should the king think, oh, they're going to be here for a while, I can wait and ask them questions later. Once they get settled, once they've had a little prasadam, let them take a little nap, and then we'll get back together and talk again. No, the king's like, wait, here's sages, let me immediately inquire from them. Let me immediately take advantage of their association by gaining that knowledge. This is the proper way to understand and receive a saintly person. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in this world there are different types of mercy. But ordinary mercy cannot bring about the cessation of all unhappiness. In other words, there are many humanitarians, altruists, and social reformers who certainly work for the betterment of humanity. Bhaktisiddhanta himself, or to speak of Prabhupada's own words, don't dismiss these people. Okay, they're doing something. They're helping humanity. These things are there. They're beneficial. But they're not the ultimate mercy, as he says. Such persons are universally considered merciful. But in spite of their mercy, humanity continues to suffer in the grip of birth, old age, disease, and death. So you may have these people, there's this one famous chef, I forget his name, he goes to all the hot trouble spots of the world and distributes food. You know, he considers this his service to humanity, a very good service to humanity. But does it eliminate birth, death, old age, and disease? It does not. And Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta says, I may distribute free food to the needy, but even after eating my merciful gift, the recipient will then again become hungry, or they will suffer in some other way. In other words, by mere humanitarianism and altruism, people do not actually become free from unhappiness. Their unhappiness is merely postponed or altered. King Nimi was joyful upon seeing the Navayogendras because he knew that they were eternally perfect associates of the Lord. Therefore, he thought, you are not prone to sinful activities like unfortunate, mundane people such as me. Thus, the words you speak carry no deception or exploitation. This takes us back to this point of submissive hearing. The king did not think, I'm a big king, I've got control over so much jurisdiction here, so many people at my beck and call. Why should I hear from these people? I have everything I need right here. No, he had a submissive, humble state of mind. Sinful activities of ordinary persons like me. So he considered himself to be ordinary and considered that he's engaged in different types of sinful activities as a king. So your words will benefit me because they're not like the words that I'm dealing with in my diplomacy and in my management of the kingdom. There's no deception, no exploitation there, no looking out for me. Your words are simply there for the benefit of humanity. Therefore, these are the real sadhus. The material conditioned souls spend their days and nights discussing topics of sense gratification. This is, I've been listening in the series of lectures, and Prabhupada's been speaking a bit about the newspapers. He said, you will never find a single newspaper in any of our temples. Of course, that's true now because there aren't any newspapers. Nobody reads a newspaper. You know, the newspaper at the morning or the dinner table or the newspaper being put onto the doorstep, and then none of that's done. Now everything is on these little electronic devices we have. You know, I mean, this small thing right here, it's a little bigger than my other one, but this small tablet right here has every single book that Prabhupada has ever written, every single lecture he's ever spoken. So who needs a newspaper? We have these things. But if we use these things instead for the material consciousness, for the material topics, for the discussion of different types of sense gratification, then this simply binds us more to the material world. They will never find the time to hear about transcendental knowledge. Therefore, when, as devotees, we get these electronic devices, we download Veda Base, we download Prabhupada Vani, we download Prabhupada Leela, all these different things that are there so that we can use them to advance our Krishna consciousness. But even only briefly or accidentally, if someone hears Hari Katha, the topics of Krishna, in the association of the pure devotees of the Lord, their propensity to suffer in the material world will slacken. Prabhupada doesn't necessarily say that it's going to go away just by hearing. The hearing plants the seed. The hearing gives the knowledge. The hearing gives the facility. It requires some reciprocation on the part of the hearer. We can't just hear and then, okay, I went to the Bhagavat Saptaha. I sat for 7 days and heard Bhagavatam. Now everything in my life is perfect. No, it's not like that. Hearing allows us the opportunity to get rid of that material activity. The Prabhupada says here, it will slacken. It will be reduced a bit. But to eliminate it requires reciprocation on our part. We have to step forward. And you know, the famous analogy I always use, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So you can give the devotee the topics of Krishna, you can give the non-devotee the topics of Krishna, but unless we're willing to embrace that and take it into our lives, make it a part of what we do, make it a part of our daily activity, then it means that simply we're just slackening a little bit the material impact on us because we heard some Krishna katha. When one sees liberated persons, hears about Krishna from those liberated persons, remembers the saintly behavior of those liberated persons, and so on, one's tendency to bind himself into the illusion of sense gratification is diminished, and he becomes eager to serve the Supreme Lord. This is like a wonderful verse. This should be like, you know, a signboard somewhere, you know. When one sees a liberated person, when one hears about Krishna from the liberated persons, when one remembers the saintly behavior of the liberated persons, one's tendency to bind themselves in the illusion of sense gratification is diminished, and one becomes eager to serve the Supreme Lord. Such an important remembrance for us to grasp onto. Now, this type of thought process, this type of mentality is very much prominent in the activities we see here today in Ramchandra Kaviraj. Ramchandra Kaviraj, very, very important personality. Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that love of God awakens in the heart when two things happen. When one, it will manifest towards the devotees as intimate, selfless friendship, and two, it will manifest toward the conditioned souls as pure compassion and genuine concern and love. Both of these activities are completely prominent in the life of Ramchandra Kaviraj. Ramchandra Kaviraj, as far as the friendship, he was the intimate friend of Narottam Das Thakur, disciple of Srinivas Acharya, and Srinivas gave him, you could say, as a gift to Narottam, to assist Narottam in his preaching, to become his associate. Very, very dear to him. And toward the conditioned souls, out of compassion and genuine love and concern, we'll see in his own activities, there were many things that he was engaged in. Very much. Now, his family, it's important to point out about his family background, because his family, first of all, he had a brother, Govinda Kaviraj, and the two of them were the crown jewels of the family. Bhakti Ratnakar explains to us, though, that the family themselves, they were worshippers of goddess. They were Shakti followers. And this was during the time of Mahaprabhu. This was very, very common. Different backgrounds, but the worship of Devi, the worship of Durga, the worship of Kali, this is very, very common in Bengal, and particularly at the time of Mahaprabhu, it was very common. So Ramchandra Kaviraj and Govinda, once the father and mother passed away, they relocated to the region to live with their grandfather. Their grandfather was Damodar Kaviraj, and he was a big, big Durga worshiper, very, very well known. And he was initiated into the cult of worshiping Durga. He was very prominent and respected. And so we see an interesting thing here. This is a single family, but there are different followers of different traditions within the family. The grandparents, the parents, they were worshiping the goddess energy. And Ramchandra Kaviraj and his brother Govinda, they're worshippers of Vaishnavas. So somehow or another, even within the same family, different moods can be there. Ramchandra Kaviraj himself, Kaviraj, because he was a medical practitioner, generally, you know, many of the followers of Mahaprabhu were medical practitioners. It's interesting, this whole concept of a moment's association with the devotee, because this is how Ramchandra embraced his perfection, his path of perfection. In Yajigram, Srinivas Acharya had his ashram, and he was gathered on the veranda of his ashram residence, and he was speaking on the Bhagavatam. And at that time, there was a procession going by. It was a marriage procession. And that marriage procession had a palanquin in it, and that palanquin was the palanquin of Ramchandra Kaviraj, who had just been married. And he was being carried along with his new bride into the village where they were going to reside. Now, the procession passed the home of Srinivasacharya, the ashram, and Srinivas was speaking. As they passed, Srinivasacharya saw the procession and noted Ramchandra was in the palanquin. As they passed, Ramchandra saw Srinivasacharya speaking the Bhagavatam on the veranda of his ashram, and they both made eye contact. And by seeing each other, the love of friendship sparked deep within their hearts. And they both understood that there was something very special about this personality. So they felt within their hearts they had to meet each other. Srinivasacharya, of course, a very advanced acharya. We know he's part of the famous duo, Narottam Srinivas and Shyamananda, trained by Jiva Goswami, sent off to do their own preaching and develop, you know, their path. And so when he saw this personality, he inquired from his disciples on either side, who is this? What is his name? What varna does he belong to, and where does he reside? And Srinivas's disciples and associates and all they point, oh, he's the great scholar, Ramchandra Kaviraj. Very, very learned. He's an excellent poet. He has written songs. He's a physician. And as you can see, he has just gotten married. So Ramchandra was settled in this palanquin and could hear as they were going by the sweet katha coming from the mouth of Srinivasacharya. And all he could think about was Srinivasacharya. After some short time, the procession reached the home, what was going to be the residence. Everyone was very, very excited to see Ramchandra Kaviraj and his new bride, Ratnamala. And there was a lot of hubbub, as we would say, festivities and, you know, enjoying and prasadam and all these different things. However, during all of this activity in which Ramchandra Kaviraj and his wife Ratnamala were the focus, his mind was completely absorbed in this bare few seconds of association he had by seeing Srinivasacharya. Now, at this point, the story has two storylines. I'm sticking with the one I'm going to tell because it's from Bhakti Ratnakar. That evening, as the bride and groom turned in for the night, Ramchandra Kaviraj got up from the bed and left and went and stayed with one Brahmin friend in Yajigram. And he decided he had to get the association of Srinivasacharya. Now, I don't know if this is the best way to spend one's first night with the bride, to abandon her and go to the sadhus. You know, we'll let individuals decide that. The other way the story is told is that his bride went with him, but we're sticking with the Bhakti Ratnakar version. So at any rate, in the morning, following morning, after spending the night in the home of one local Brahmin, he went to the place of Srinivasacharya, and he submitted himself to the lotus feet of Srinivasacharya, offered his obeisances. Now, Srinivasacharya had similarly been thinking about him since Ramchandra passed by his front area there. So he saw that, Ramchandra has come. So he got off of his seat and reached down and picked him up and embraced him. And he said to him, birth after birth, you are my most dear friend. In the same way that the Lord has caused my meeting with Narottam in Vrindavan, he has now also reunited me with another dear friend. So this is very interesting, that the mood towards a disciple generally is not quite so intimate like this. But this is a very, very special relationship here. So it mentions that for some period of time, Ramchandra Kaviraj stayed in Srinivasacharya's ashram and studied under him all the different literatures of the six Goswamis that, you remember, Srinivas had brought them with him, had gotten them back from the king of Vani Vishnupur. And he heard from him about the instructions of Jiva Goswami and all these different writings. So, you know, it was very, very nice. And Srinivasacharya was very pleased to see the gentle and polite behavior of Ramchandra Kaviraj and noted that he had a very deep spiritual nature about him. So on the appropriate, auspicious day, he initiated him. And then it mentions after some time, Ramchandra Kaviraj then returned to the home where the bride was and where the rest of the family was. Now, keep in mind, the extended family, they're all Shaktas. So when they saw Ramchandra, the crown jewel of the family, has taken on the Kanti Mala, has taken on the Vaishnava Tilak, has taken on the process of adapting the ways of Vaishnava life, they were very, very unhappy, both externally, verbally, and in their mood. They were not satisfied with this at all. This was not what they expected, not what they wanted, not how it would carry on the family line. 12 places of tilak he had marked, had the japa in the hand. So he sat down in front of all of them and began to chant steadfastly the holy names of the Lord. And debated with them on the topics. They would try to persuade him otherwise, but he could not be defeated. Now, one day, as he was returning from having taken his bath to his home, one of his Shakta neighbors, they said to him, Kaviraj, Kaviraj, without worshiping Lord Shiva and his consort, how are you going home? Your grandfather, he was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. Why have you given up Lord Shiva's worship? No, Ramchandra Kaviraj answered very nicely. He said, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they are incarnations of the guna avatars. They were created by Lord Krishna. The worship of these two personalities is in the mode of passion and ignorance. However, the worship of Lord Vishnu as a Vaishnava is the supreme worship because he is the source of all other expansions. He is the source of all incarnations. By worshiping Krishna, all other worship is performed. Just by watering the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches become nourished. So sometimes we might think that some of these analogies we hear from Prabhupada, oh, Prabhupada was very smart to have thought of this. It's true, he was, but we see there's a deeper source on these. So then Ramchandra Kaviraj mentions them. He says, Prahlad, Dhruva, all so many other devotees, they were all very dear to Lord Krishna. And Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are naturally disposed to them. Whereas Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Banasura, and all variety of other demons who were only devotees of Lord Shiva, they're not devotees of Lord Krishna. And thus, their ultimate end was that they were simply destroyed. And he continued preaching to the Shakta neighbors. He said, the Shastra says that Lord Brahma was able to create this world due to having successfully worshipped Lord Vishnu. Similarly, Lord Shiva has become qualified to invoke auspiciousness in this world due to having received the foot wash, the water of Lord Vishnu, the Ganges, on his own head. So when the Shakta followers, his neighbors and associates, heard this explanation, they were completely speechless. You know, how is this young boy just in a few days understood this so much and has embraced this so eagerly? So Ramchandra decided he wanted to have the darshan of Sri Vrindavan. He wanted to go and associate with the Goswamis that were left there at that time. We can imagine, sometimes we get to go to Vrindavan, sometimes we're very eager to go to Vrindavan, but imagine what it must have been like to have that eagerness to go there because the six Goswamis, some of them, were still present there, all these great personalities. So it mentions that Ramchandra Kaviraj petitioned Raghunandana. Raghunandana Thakur was the senior Vaishnava in the place he was living, so he went to him for permission. This is also an important point, too. He didn't act independently. That's quite a common thing that one should take the blessings of the deity before they go on any journey. For traveling away from the home or before going on pilgrimage, one should come before the deity in their residing temple and request permission. So in this way, he went to Raghunanda and he asked, you know, can I have your permission? I'd like to go to Vrindavan and associate with Jiva Goswami and others. Yes, yes, you go. Certainly. No problem. Yeah, that's a very good desire. So the very next day, once got their permission, he set out for Vrindavan. And of course, he passed through all the different holy places you do, going from Bengal to Vrindavan, Gaya, Kashi, Prayag, all these different places. Finally, he arrived in Mathura, went to Vishramgad, took bath, and got the darshan of the Adi Keshava deity. And then he went to Vrindavan. Now, at this time, one may ask, well, why did you go to Raghunandana and take permission instead of Srinivasacharya? Srinivas was his guru. Because Srinivasacharya was in Vrindavan at the time. This was another one of his impetuses and reasons for wanting to go to Vrindavan, because Srinivasacharya was also there at that time. He'd gone back for a visit, so to speak. So Ramchandra arrived there, offered his obeisances, he was introduced to Jiva Goswami, and, you know, they immediately inquired different, you know, how are the different devotees in Gaudadesh doing? How is the preaching going on there? Is the distribution of the books that we sent happening and like this, you know? So Jiva Goswami said to Ramchandra, he said, you go and take the darshan of the different deities, Govindaji, Gopinath, Madan Mohan, and go to Sanatana Goswami's samadhi as well. Then he visited with Gopal Bhatta Goswami, whose observance is today. We haven't spoken about Gopal Bhatta Goswami today because there's much has been said about Gopal Bhatta Goswami on my YouTube channel. I have 5 or 6 different lectures about his life and about his involvement in the appearance of the Radharaman deity and the activities of that temple. So that's why we're just speaking. Ramchandra Kaviraj doesn't usually get as much notice as Gopal Bhatta on this day. He told him also, you go and see Lokanath Goswami and Bhugarbha Goswami. As you know, Lokanath and Bhugarbha were the first two of all the Goswamis to come to Vrindavan, having been sent there many, many years prior by Mahaprabhu. And, you know, they were very, the time that Ramchandra spent there was short, but in that time, the different Goswamis were very, very impressed by his poetic abilities. Apparently, he was writing songs and poetry quite often. So they awarded him the title Kaviraj. So at this point is when he becomes known as Ramchandra Kaviraj. So it mentions, though, that after remaining in the Goswami's association for a short time, they instructed him, okay, now you return to Gaudadesh. So here again, sometimes we go to Vrindavan and we think, oh, I'd like to stay there much longer than I have. I only got, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks, whatever it is. You know, how long were you just there for, Pundarik Prabhu? You and your wife were there, what, a month, I think? You know, yeah, traveling around like that. So, you know, we sometimes think, oh, it'd be nice if I could stay longer. But, I mean, even someone as advanced as Ramchandra Kaviraj, the Goswami's instructed him, now you return, take what you've learned here, take the knowledge you've received, and go back to Gaudadesh and share that. So, you know, in this way, he did go back and travel extensively, you know, spend quite a bit of time. The life of Ramchandra Kaviraj and his deep involvement with Narottam is very significant in two particular pastimes, three actually. One is the establishing of the first Gaur Purnima at Khetri. The second is the conversion of the two Muslim boys, Hari Ram and Ramakrishna, a very, very wonderful story. And the third is how they saved, how he and his godbrother, Ganga Narayan Chakravarti, saved Narottam from the difficulties of Rup Narayan and King Narasimha. There had been some challenges to Narottam, and so an entire assembly of pundits and different personalities came. They were going to challenge Narottam in his home base. They came, a whole group, that was going to be a big deal. Now, Ramchandra Kaviraj and Ganga Narayan Chakravarti decided that this is a waste of Narottam's time, so we'll dismiss these people. So they decided how to do it on the outskirts of the town. When this huge entourage arrived, they set up camp outside with the idea of going in the next morning to issue the challenge. So they set up at the edge of the town two ordinary shops. One selling clay pots, and one was selling pawn and betel and other types of ingredients like that. And they were across the street from each other. So these Brahmins from the king's entourage, they got up the next morning and came into town to purchase some pots and some things for what they need for their morning services and food cooking and all like that. And so they began a discussion with Ganganarayan Chakravarti, who was running the clay pot stand. And they asked him, so what is the price on this? And he returned the answer in perfect Sanskrit. A little surprised, huh? Clay pot seller knows Sanskrit, huh? So you know Sanskrit? Oh, yes, I do. How do you know Sanskrit? Oh, all the disciples of Narottam know Sanskrit. Oh, you're a disciple of Narottam, yes. Well, what do you know about? And they started quizzing him. And while they're quizzing him, he's answering everything. Of course, Ganganarayan Chakravarti is no just clay pot seller. He's one of the most prominent followers of Narottam, extremely learned. And so he starts defeating them in perfect Sanskrit with perfect quotation of all the different works. So they're a little surprised they're being, you know, taken. I'm shortening the whole story here. And so from across the street, I'm Chandakaviraj, and they're, of course, they're not dressed in their Vaishnava dress. They're dressed as a panwala or a clay pot seller, and a little role playing, we would call it. And so Ramchandra Kaviraj calls out to his friend Ganganarayan in perfect Sanskrit, hey Baba, what's going on? What's all the hubbub? What's the, you know? And so the Brahmins, they turn around, and here's this panwala speaking in eloquent Sanskrit. Oh, well, how do you know? You're a disciple of, oh yes, I'm also a disciple of Narottam. And so they started with him again, and then Ramchandra Kaviraj also just defeated them. I mean, Ramchandra Kaviraj has already had a life full of defeating such personalities. So the Brahmins, they start talking amongst themselves. If these are just the common street vendor disciples of Narottam, what's going to happen when we actually meet his prominent Brahminical disciples and then Narottam himself? We're going to be finished. Okay, let's cancel the whole thing. So they go back to the king, and they tell him, okay, look, we've made a big mistake here. Let's just stop this whole thing. Well, of course, we know the whole story. It doesn't go that way. The king comes forward, and he meets with Narottam, and then ultimately they all become the disciples of Narottam. So this is one way in which Ramchandra Kaviraj very devotedly serves his dear friend, Ramchandra, Narottam Das Thakur. And Narottam was so attached to Ramchandra and his one song, Doyakura Shri Acharya Prabhu Srinivas, Ramchandra Sangamagi Narottama Das. O Srinivas Acharya Prabhu, kindly have mercy upon me. I, Narottam, always pray for the association of Ramchandra Kaviraj. So we should take a day like today and particularly engage ourselves in the, you know, reading of the pastimes of Ramchandra Kaviraj and hearing about the pastimes of Ramchandra Kaviraj, becoming acquainted with him. If we don't know much about him, it can be found easily on the internet. Shameless promotion, I have some good conversations on my YouTube channel about Ramchandra Kaviraj. But at any rate, this is the purpose of these activities, days being mentioned in our Vaishnava calendar, that we take the time to discuss them, that we take the time to hear about them, that we take the time to interrupt our regular daily activities so that we can understand greater these personalities who've come before us and have set the standard, set the path, and set the guidance on how we can behave as devotees. So we'll finish there for today's verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita and the pastimes of Ramchandra Kaviraj. If anyone has any questions, comments, corrections, Pundarik Vidyanidhi Prabhu. I'm always nervous when somebody is advanced in the knowledge of the acharyas as Pundarik wants to ask me a question.
Hare Krishna. No, it's very interesting. I just had a question about you. Quoted that Hari Bhakti Vilas says that something you shouldn't inquire about someone's welfare.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like the in the Bhakti Ratnakar it talks about the one of the compilers of Bhakti Hari Bhakti Vilas, sorry. Hari Bhakti Vilas says that you shouldn't inquire about people's welfare, but one of the compilers, Sanatan Goswami, is described as when he was going around Braj inquiring about different people's welfares.
Can you
explain something?
That was the interesting thing about Sanatan Goswami, is that he was so dear to all the Brajbasis because of that concern for their well-being. And of course, we can understand he imparted knowledge to them at the same time in these conversations. But yeah, it's mentioned how he would inquire, you know, how's the business? Did the daughter get married yet? How's the son's education? You know, just to give them a sense of familiarity with him. And he became so much accepted at that, as you well know, that when he passed away, every single male in all of Braj shaved their head as if their family father or elder had departed. Yeah.
One other thing is that it talked about being free from fear, and I was just thinking that fear is also one of the seven indirect expressions of ecstatic love. No, the humors, the rasas,
mm-hmm.
seven indirects. So there's some type of fear in the.
Well, that type of fear is connected to always depending on Krishna and wanting him to be present. That question reminds me of a question I've mentioned sometimes before, that back in the days when we were distributing Nectar Devotion in the airports, we had this guy come up to us once, and he had obviously gotten a Nectar Devotion. He said, "I got a question for you guys." We're like, "Yeah." He said, "How is belching a symbol of ecstatic love?" So, yes, in one of the direct, indirect relationships of ecstasy, fear is there. Yes, Mother Agamaka.
At first, it sounded like Ramachandra Kaviraj took initiation from Srinivas Acharya.
That's absolutely correct.
But when he was the Panmala, he identified as a disciple, or they identified him as a disciple of Narottam.
Say that again?
As a Panwala, they identified him as a disciple of Narottam.
Well, follower. Of Narottam. Okay. We can use the word follower. I mean, he was with Narottam for the bulk of Narottam's life after his initiation with Srinivas. Srinivas, as I mentioned, placed him in Narottam's care to assist Narottam and for his own benefit. So I guess you could say Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru. But the interesting thing is that they would both initiate at the same time, Narottam and Ramchandra Kaviraj. When they were traveling together and they would meet people, they would both initiate, you know, particularly those two Muslim boys. One initiated the other. So, yeah, he was a follower. He was a Shiksha disciple. But at the same time, he was more of a contemporary. Yeah. But yes, he was definitely the disciple of Srinivas Acharya. And Narottam never overstepped that position of dismissing that relationship with Srinivas Acharya. That's an important factor there also. Yeah. What's that? Save me, Pundarik. Bhakti Ratnakar, the author of Bhakti Ratnakar is... No, thank you. Yeah, Narayana Chakravarti Thakur. Yeah. All right, so we'll finish there today. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.